Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Dakota Digest podcast for the week ending November 6th. I'm Nate Weck, and thanks for joining me. President Barack Obama has rejected a permit that would allow the Keystone Pipeline to cross the Canadian border. Many pipeline backers see this as a defeat that hurts the economy and costs U.S. jobs. But others, including landowners who oppose the pipeline, see this as victory for the environment, water quality, and private property rights. SDPB's Charles Michael Ray has more.
John Harcher grew up ranching near Winner, South Dakota. He says TransCanada threatened the use of eminent domain to put the Keystone Pipeline across his land. Harcher worried about pipeline leaks into the Oglala Aquifer, a major source of water in several states.
It's a well-known fact that the products that can leach out of this can get into the water and travel with water.
Harcher gave support to a protest camp established near the Rosebud Reservation that aimed to block Keystone. He says the alliance made between ranchers, tribal representatives, and conservationists in opposition to KXL will continue forward.
To protect the resources that every common, everyday person needs to live, and that's one of the big things that corporate America and the government's got to get through their heads, that it isn't just an... Everything isn't just about money. It's about a way of life and how we make a living and what we need to sustain ourselves.
Both South Dakota's U.S. senators and the governor expressed disappointment at this decision. U.S. Senator John Thune accuses President Obama of appeasing the left wing of his political base. Senator Mike Rounds says this decision affirms the actions Congress needs to take to move the project forward. TransCanada issued a statement expressing disappointment, saying this decision hurts jobs and the economy. PUC Chair Chris Nelson says commissioners will issue their decision on KXL by the end of the year.
The U.S. House of Representatives passed a multi-year transportation bill. As SDPB's Jennifer Jones reports, Representative Kristi Noem says the measure gives certainty to state officials.
Congresswoman Kristi Noem says the six-year authorization bill allows state transportation officials to complete projects that take many years to plan and implement. She says the hard part is agreeing on funding.
The trust fund is reliant on a gas tax, but as vehicles get more efficient and vehicles get smaller, we drive less, but the revenue stream has dried up. So the Senate had some pay-fors in there that were debated. We amended some of those on the House floor as well. That will go to conference, and that's where they'll be resolved.
Noem says she's optimistic that lawmakers will come out of conference committee with the revenue to fund 3 years of the bill.
South Dakota Supreme Court justices weigh in when lawyers come before them to make oral arguments. And they did so in October, when the defense made a case for calling Fall River County residents as jurors for an Oglala Lakota County lawsuit. Justices issued an opinion in that case Thursday, November 5th. An attorney for a civil defendant on the Pine Ridge Reservation argued that enrolled tribal members should not be included in a potential jury pool. But justices ruled that eliminating tribal members as potential jurors for state cases in their county violates state law and state constitution. SDPB Vicki Wicks has the story.
The negligence suit against Black Hills Dialysis started in 2011 when Vera Goodlance fell and suffered broken bones at the dialysis center's Shannon County facility. Shannon County, now renamed Oglala Lakota County, has no state courthouse and contracts with Fall River County. Before trial, Judge Robert Mandel ruled that jurors are to be selected from Fall River County residents. He made that ruling based on a 2009 standing order from then-presiding Judge Jeff Davis, which said, in part, that since the state does not have jurisdiction over the Pine Ridge Reservation, it cannot enforce summonses to prospective jurors who are tribal members. During oral arguments in October, defense attorney Gregory Bernard explains.
A summons can be issued. And a summons can be served, I believe, on an enrolled member. But the court has no jurisdiction on the reservation to force those people to come off the reservation and appear before this court.
What if they come voluntarily?
If they come voluntarily, that's part of the structural defect, Your Honor.
The structural defect Bernard speaks of is the potential result that only people who want to serve will show up, and they might want to serve because they have an interest in the case. He says that leads to bias. In its written opinion, the Supreme Court vacates the 2009 standing order and reverses the circuit court's ruling. Justices rule unanimously that eliminating almost an entire county's population from jury duty is, in effect, a change of venue for court cases arising from actions in that county. They say any biases of potential jurors can be weeded out during jury selection.
Medical professionals from six small hospitals across South Dakota are learning how to handle complications during childbirth. As SDPB's Keely Boltino reports, Avira Health teams of doctors, anesthesiologists, nurses, and other care providers are working in teams in critical simulations.
Eight medical professionals crowd around a simulator that forces them to figure out how to deliver a baby when its shoulders are stuck.
Please stop pushing. Blow through it. I need some legs out.
Call for help.
Help. Super big pressure.
All right. Okay, you're at 100, 140, 150, 170.
Avera's Dr. Kimberly McKay says healthcare providers in smaller hospitals don't deliver that many babies, so they encounter few complicated births. She says that means they must rehearse for situations that go wrong. McKay says shoulder dystocia is a good example.
When you work in a facility like Pierre or Aberdeen, where you're doing 500 or 600 deliveries a year, that will happen, you know, 1 or 2% of the time. But if you think about how often that's happening up there, maybe that's 2 or 3 times a year. And so the maneuvers that you need to do to get a baby out without breaking a bone or without having brain damage are super, super important to practice. I don't really like practicing on patients or feeling like I'm practicing at the time that it happens. And so what we're really doing is bringing people into simulations so that they can practice their maneuvers on what we have these pelvic models and fake babies so that they know what to do in the event of an emergency.
The emergency training ranges from situations where babies get stuck to coping with dangerous blood loss for a mom after she delivers to resuscitating a newborn baby.
If I am breathing for the baby, how do I know the air goes in?
Just rises.
And we already talked about this.
Dr. Susan Mann practices medicine in Boston and teaches at Harvard Medical School. She says this delivery training focuses on problems that concern rural healthcare workers. They have fewer resources than large facilities, especially at night.
It's also important the staff understands how far away do these people live, so that if you anticipate there could be a problem, then it's better to call them in sooner than to wait till there really is a problem. Some problems we can anticipate. There's much smaller percent that we can't anticipate, and we do as best as we can with those. But if you anticipate there's a problem, there should be a plan in place for every patient, no matter what size hospital you're delivering at.
Mann says the participants can become trainers for other staff at their own hospitals, so all medical professionals involved in obstetrics are prepared for the worst.
The U.S. Department of Justice is suing the South Dakota Department of Social Services for discriminatory hiring practices. The complaint was filed Tuesday, November 3rd, in federal court in Rapid City. The Justice Department claims that DSS passes overqualified Native applicants for higher-paying jobs and hires less qualified non-Indians. SDPB's Vicki Wicks has more.
The case started in 2010 when DSS listed a vacancy at Pine Ridge for an employment specialist. That employee assists people receiving benefits to get jobs. According to the complaint, Cedric Goodman and 4 other Native people applied for the job along with 1 white applicant. Goodman had the education and experience called for, including a bachelor's degree, 30 hours toward a master's degree, 5 years of social work, and 4 years as an employment specialist. After conducting interviews, DSS closed the vacancy but reopened it the following day and ended up hiring a white female recent college graduate with no applicable experience. The complaint charges DSS with a pattern of discrimination, hiring non-Indians for higher-paying specialist jobs and Native people for lesser-paying jobs. DOJ says DSS uses arbitrary and subjective decision-making to reject Native applicants in favor of non-Native applicants. A 2-year review of DSS practices indicates 92% of hires for specialist positions were white and 8% or 1 person was Native. DOJ charges that DSS closes positions rather than hiring qualified Native applicants. Complaints were first handled by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. When that agency failed to resolve the issues, EEOC sent the case to the Justice Department. The relief sought includes that DSS stop discriminating and adopt a selection process that complies with federal employment law. Other sanctions include putting Goodman in the next employment specialist job that comes open at Pine Ridge and awarding back pay and other damages to applicants. Federal Judge Jeffrey Viken will hear the case. DSS has not yet filed a response.
Wednesday was National Eating Healthy Day. The American Heart Association wanted to encourage families to focus on eating healthy for a day to build good habits. SDPB's Erin Myros had the story.
As part of National Eating Healthy Day, the American Heart Association and Beef Industry Council are encouraging consumers to make small changes in daily eating habits. Chrissy Meyer is the communications director for the American Heart Association. She says one step to forming good habits is incorporating fruits and vegetables into each meal.
Well, if you're taking your lunch to work, instead of grabbing that bag of chips, maybe grab a bag of baby carrots instead and try to get one more serving of vegetables into your day.
And with the start of the holiday season, Meyer's best advice to not breaking good habits is to consume holiday foods in moderation.
If you are at a holiday party and there's a buffet of food out on the table, you know, maybe on that first pass through the buffet, maybe you're going to load your plate up with fruits and veggies and really kind of concentrate on filling all or at least half of your plate with those healthy food options. But then also enjoy those holiday favorites.
Meyer is also encouraging people to make healthier choices in the meat aisle, too.
You know, with our partnership with the Beef Industry Council, we also want to find ways to encourage people to make leaner choices in their, you know, in their protein choices. So instead of choosing a ribeye for dinner tonight, maybe look at a leaner cut of meat like a sirloin or a tenderloin or something like that.
With over two-thirds of American adults facing obesity, Meyer says Eating Healthy Day is a good reminder to start making small changes that can improve overall health.
A former World Wrestling Entertainment superstar is debuting his own pro wrestling company with a live show this Saturday night in Sioux Falls. The promotion is called Midwest All Pro Wrestling, and it features a pro wrestling school. Nick Dinsmore, who is known as the character Eugene in WWE, is the owner and founder of Midwest All Pro Wrestling. He says he chose Sioux Falls as the host city because it's one of the fastest growing cities in the nation. Dinsmore says he wants his show to include a family-friendly environment.
I want everybody to have a good time. No violence, no swearing, no spitting, no vulgar language, nothing like that. I want to have a wholesome product that is a small business here in Sioux Falls that gives back.
A percentage of each ticket sold for the opening show goes to the VFW of Sioux Falls. Dinsmore says he chose the VFW because he's passionate about helping military vets. Along with being a live show promotion, Midwest All Pro Wrestling is a school for people wanting to become a pro wrestler. Even though Dinsmore is most known for his role as the WWE superstar Eugene, he also spent time with the company as a coach. Dinsmore says he wants to help train those who have the dream of being a pro wrestler.
That was my childhood dream. That's something I worked 8 long years to have my first entrance on Monday Night Raw, to have Howard Finkel announce your name, to make it to WrestleMania. You know, most guys don't get that far. I was in a WrestleMania segment with Hulk Hogan. You know, if that's not achieving your dreams, man, I'm fortunate, I'm lucky, had a heck of a run, and I mean, just the feeling of walking out on Monday Night Raw is like no other feeling I've ever had.
Dinsmore says Midwest All-Pro Wrestling is a perfect starting point for all-pro wrestling hopefuls. 28 high school football teams are involved in playoff semifinal games this weekend. Half the remaining field will head to Vermilion and state championship games next week. One team in one of the toughest divisions in South Dakota is in somewhat unfamiliar territory, but the Lennox Orioles defeated a heavily favored opponent on the road in the first round. SDPB's Gary Ellenbolt has the story.
Very few teams end a game against St. Thomas More with a win. Especially teams that traveled across the state, change time zones, and get the Cavaliers on their home field in Rapid City. But the Lennox Orioles pulled that off last week. Lennox was the seventh-seeded team entering the 11A playoffs, and defeated St. Thomas More 35-34. Coach Matt Luzzi says he and his coaches preached from the beginning of the season that most of the Orioles' games would be close.
We didn't make any bones about it, and we told kids, listen, we're not going to win games by 3-4 touchdowns. It's just not going to happen. We're going to win games. You know, sometimes it's going to be by touchdown, sometimes less. We're going to have to make plays. And they've bought into that, and they believe in that. And since they've had success, they feel that, you know, if we're there at the end of the game, we're going to come out on top.
The Orioles' reward for winning after a 352-mile trip to Rapid City is a 22-mile jaunt to Hartford. Tonight's opponent for Lennox, the West Central Trojans, are used to going deep in the postseason. And Orioles coach Luzzi says the Trojans are playing their best football at the right time of year.
They really are. They're going back to just bread and butter, smash mouth football that they've been known for. They're a very tough, very physical team. They do a lot of really good things offensively. Defensively, they're very sound, very well coached.
West Central defeated Lenox in the regular season 35-7. The winner plays Madison or Sioux Falls Christian in the 11A championship game.
And that's going to do it for this week's edition of the Dakota Digest podcast. If you want more stories and programming information from South Dakota Public Broadcasting, visit us online at sdpb.org. On our website, you can also sign up for our news and information or sports and leisure newsletters. These newsletters will give you weekly rundowns on the top stories for the week. Connect with us through social media by liking us on Facebook and by following our Twitter accounts at SODACPB, at SDPBNews, and at SDPBSports. I'll be back again next week for another edition of the Dakota Digest podcast. I'm Nate Weck with South Dakota Public Broadcasting. So long, everyone.